Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Press Coverage here on the Going for Two Live Network. My guest for this episode is Ryan McDowell from DLF. Ryan, you've been doing double duty on the Going for Two Live Network in this last week, a recent armchair appearance, but welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Glad to be on here. Always glad to join you guys, and I think it's my first time podcasting with you, so good to meet you. Good to be on here.
Yes, it is. Nice to be you, Ryan. I'm Kyle Senra, in case the listeners didn't know, but also now Ryan knows too. But and this show, Press Coverage, is brought to you by one of our sponsors, Underdog. So we'll quickly get the sponsorship out of the way right at the start. So Underdog will be happy there. Because it's, guess what? Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. And I guess there's a couple games started already, but you could still even bet on games later tonight. NBA playoffs, of course. And, golf season continues. The Masters was just a couple weeks ago. There'll be some more majors to come. And of course, Ryan, our favorite is doing drafts. Underdog best ball drafts are absolutely incredibly popular. And if you haven't signed up for Underdog yet, you can do so now with a bit of a perk. If you use our promo code GF2, or for those watching on video, you got this QR code if you use to sign up with. Using either of those two options, you will get a double deposit match up to $100, meaning whatever you deposit on that initial deposit, Underdog will match, and you'll get double of that amount in your funds ready to go and, again, start betting on tonight's games. I think the Wild and Stars play in an hour, so that's a fun for I'll ramble off to start, but that's a fun matchup because the Dallas Stars used to be the Minnesota North Stars, so that's a fun revenge matchup, the new Minnesota versus the old Minnesota. But I'm just, that's old news, right?
We're talking fantasy football. I can't help you on the hockey too much, Kyle. Sorry.
That's okay. I know you know some other sports, obviously.
I'll leave that to you Canadians.
Yeah, true. It's funny because more rambling, I'm pretty sure Minnesota had set a record for number of NHL players to start this year from a single state. And it was, about the same number amount of quarterbacks that started in the NFL this past season. So quite a lot. So it's not just Canada. There's certain states where like Minnesota is a hockey mad state.
Oh, for
like
sure.
There's a lot of players developed there, and certain areas, right? States have their own sports. I know you're from Kentucky, and there's a very specific team that's always super popular in Kentucky, especially in a specific sport. But
For sure, we might talk about that a little bit here in the show.
Yeah, but of course, I guess already a couple of guests chiming in. Jamie's here. What up, Kyle? Nice to see you. And Ryan, twice in a week. Yeah, just mentioning that as appreciative of Ryan joining Jeff on the Armchair Show, and appreciative, Jeff, of giving us this. And of course, giving us goingfor2.com, which everyone should check out. Lots of rookie draft profiles. I know I'm on the Dynasty Gambit Thursday and prepping for our guests there, and just was going to go through the rookie profiles we had available on the site and kind of use this episode to preview that. And it's like, wow, there's just so many. The Podfather was just talking about you the other day. I would assume that is directed at Ryan and not me. Matt Kelly, I think, is the Podfather.
Yeah, that's Matt. I missed it if he's talking about me, but I'll have to catch up with that. They put out so many pods over there that it's hard to keep up, but yeah, Matt's a good guy, and definitely always producing tons of content.
Yeah, great. Of course, there's always, like we mentioned, there's always sports happening, as I mentioned in the Underdog promo. But that's what we're going to start with. Where was your love of sports first started?
Yeah, well, we've already kind of hinted at it a little bit, but growing up in Kentucky and living here basically my whole life, I mean, Kentucky is a basketball state, specifically a college basketball state. So I'm a Kentucky fan, and I mean, early sports memories certainly revolve around watching and listening to Kentucky basketball with my dad and my family. That's a big piece of it. I think on a professional level, my dad was also a big baseball fan, and the first World Series I specifically remember was the and certainly aging myself here, but that's okay. We'll do that some more tonight. The 1986 World Series. So that was Red Sox Mets. And of course, at that time, the Red Sox had not won a World Series for dozens of years, many years.
I would think isn't at that point, it's like 70 years, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number, but it certainly had been a long time, and it would be many more years before they would get it done. But of course, the play that has become famous now, the ball rolling between the first baseman's legs, Bill Buckner's legs, to basically lose the World Series for the Red Sox. And my dad was a Yankees fan and passed that down to me. So the Yankees were terrible at that time when I was first becoming a baseball fan. So we got a little bit of enjoyment, at least, to see our rival lose.
That's a very specific time capsule time, too, because there hasn't been too many times in their history where they've been awful.
Yeah, that year, 1986, I was 10, and that was the year that I really feel like I became a baseball fan. And I don't know, the Yankees were bad, and were bad for a while, probably 10 more years before they actually became competitive. So the first several years of my baseball fandom was a rough go, but I stuck with it until I eventually kind of pivoted to football and fantasy football.
It's a little more fun anyway, as long, at least I would say that. I've got the Canadian bias, of course.
Yeah, I understand.
I am aware, because they, you know, made it a big deal here in Canada. I guess the Tampa Bay Rays this year started like 13-0. And it was the Blue Jays that ended their win streak. So shout out to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I saw that. Of course, you know, for better or worse, I don't follow baseball as much as I used to, probably not as much as I did when I was even 10 years old, but still cheer on the Yankees when I get a chance.
Of course. And, you know, through evolution of sports, obviously we're here right now on this primarily fantasy football based channel. And so where did you get started in fantasy sports?
So my father was a baseball fan. Our local area is all college basketball, whether you're a Kentucky or a Louisville fan. And football, honestly, professional football especially, just not really big in Kentucky. I did not grow up a football fan. I didn't grow up with a favorite team, and I still don't have a favorite team. But once I kind of got out in the real world, got a job teaching elementary school, I became friends with a guy, one of the few other male teachers in the building. And he was just always talking about his fantasy football team. And, you know, I knew what fantasy football was, but I had never played, never tried it. Again, wasn't really even a football fan at that point. And eventually kind of became more and more interested in what he was talking about. Sounded fun. And he eventually invited me to join his league. That was the first league I ever played, and it was a dynasty league. So my first league, you know, I skipped over the redraft portion and went straight to dynasty, which is not the norm, you know, for fantasy football players or for dynasty players even. But yeah, really, once I got into that league, was just you know, became addicted very quickly, honestly. Loved the concept of fantasy football and the activity and just the team management of it. And, you know, obviously just joined really as many leagues as I could from that point on.
I guess a natural fit at Dynasty League Football, DLF.
That's right. Yeah. I've played plenty of redraft leagues over the years, but I mean, Dynasty was my first love and has always been kind of my primary preference when it comes to fantasy.
So Jamie's chiming in. Remember when George Costanza had the Yankees wear all cotton jerseys?
It's yeah, that didn't work out so well.
I'm thinking like when Seinfeld airing the early 90s, that's probably that period you were talking about where the Yankees were still awful. And I guess when Seinfeld ended and maybe Costanza got fired from the Yankees. Oh, look at that there. Three straight championships, the dynasties reborn, they're back to the best team ever. So,
Well, it was always George's fault, right? So yeah, we'll blame him.
Addition by subtraction in the most significant way. It's funny because I think the first person I ever remember talking about fantasy football was a teacher when I was in high school. Was our math teacher. And I'm a teacher now, and I do substitute teaching here, and I've gone to the school he teaches at now, and we've talked about fantasy football, and I think he actually subscribes to the my other podcast, Full Press Fantasy Pod. So it's funny how that kind of came full circle, but full circle in this conversation. You've already hinted at it, and the theme of season three here on Press Coverage is interviewing teachers in the fantasy football industry, because there are so many. And so you already mentioned, I guess that we're almost going in reverse chronological order, but so I guess teaching before fantasy football, but where did you get the first inclination that you wanted to teach?
That really started early for me as well. It was in middle school, seventh grade. And up until that point, I had really struggled in math, did not enjoy math as in school at all. And then just, you know, like many people, especially like many teachers, I had that one teacher that kind of changed everything for me, and was a great teacher, helped me to really grow a love of math and numbers in general. And I just, you know, I recognized that impact that he had on me, and really wanted to do that same thing. So basically from seventh grade on, I knew I wanted to be a teacher, and honestly didn't consider really any other options throughout high school and college.
So obviously went to school to go to school. So when did you first enter the teaching profession?
I graduated college in 1998, got my first teaching job in 99. And have been at the same school ever since then. Bounced around grades a little bit, mostly have taught third grade, a few random years in a couple of other grades. And then 2 years ago, made a big switch from fifth grade at the time to teaching PE at our same elementary school. So that has been a huge adjustment. It's been a positive change for me. You know, Kyle, I would assume things are the same in Canada. Maybe, you know, hopefully for you, they're not, but teaching gets harder every day. It feels like the pressures and the stresses. So, you know, I really feel like making this change over to PE, which is a little less stressful, let's say that, has really saved my career. It's been a great change. It's been so much fun, honestly.
Honestly, my mom talked about that when she taught. That was always, she preferred to just, you know, do physical education and teach the entire school, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, I think there was a bit before that, she was a long period where she was either in, you know, 1-2 splits or 2-3 splits. In Canada, smaller communities, so we will have split grades.
Oh, we do as well. Yeah.
Okay. You know, smaller, more rural schools, I'd imagine. Or I think larger schools, just to combine.
Yeah. And I think that was, you know, that was one of the things I was hesitating about when looking at this change was, you know, as an elementary school teacher, you are able to build these deep relationships with 25 students every year. And I knew that would not be the case, seeing every student in the school. But I do feel like now I'm able to build some relationships with nearly 500 students, not as deep as previous years necessarily, but a different type of impact, hopefully, on every student.
Yeah, for sure. Perspectives always change, like, you know, and even each year, class, you know, the same class, but different batch of students, it'll never be exactly the same every single year. So just hope to do the best as often as you can, right?
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Back to fantasy sports a little bit. Have you ever used fantasy football? Or I guess, do you, I don't know if you play in any other fantasy sports, seeing how much you love baseball and basketball, but have you ever used fantasy sports in general as a part of a lesson plan?
I feel like I've seen some great examples of fantasy sports used in the classroom. Those usually seem to be in high school, you know, maybe a statistics class or a math class. I would say I've done that a little bit over the years. The one I remember especially, and unfortunately I don't even remember the specific focus that we had that day in class, but it was during a writing lesson, and we were talking about the writing process and eventually publishing your writing. And of course that looks very different in third grade than what we might think about publishing our writing. But at that point, I had been lucky enough to be included in a couple different magazines, Roto World's magazine, and a couple of others over the years. And I brought those in to class to show my students and to talk about kind of my process of coming up with ideas, taking notes, you know, collecting information and doing research, and eventually going through that process and it becoming a published article in a magazine. And, you know, it had my name and it had a headshot, and they of course thought that was the coolest thing ever, that I was actually in a magazine. So yeah, that was pretty fun. But, you know, I would say I probably haven't used it as much as I would have liked to.
I guess the idea there is showing the motivation, because those articles you wrote for those magazines probably weren't the first articles you wrote. Like it takes practice, you take time. So yes, as a way to help motivate students writing class, like this is where you practice to get to that level. It starts foundational blocks early on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was able to show them, you know, I've shown students Dynasty League football. I've shown them the website over the years and kind of navigated that to some of my content as well. And again, that's, at this point, I would say they care less about magazines and more about, you know, what you can find on the internet. And so that was impressive to some of them as well.
Yeah, I guess you've seen this shift over time, right?
Oh, yes, for sure.
And I wonder if we could talk about that in this next question, but what parallels can you draw between your time teaching, but also your experiences in fantasy football and the fantasy community?
Yeah, there's a couple things that come to mind. I would say over the years, I have kind of become known for an article that I wrote nearly 10 years ago called Productive Struggle. And, you know, as you probably know, Kyle, that is not a fantasy football term, as much as we might make it that. It's an educational term. And around 10 years ago, we had a training after school one day, and they were talking about productive struggle. And I had, you know, I'd heard the term. It's not necessarily something we use every day, even in the education field. But I had heard that term and was familiar with it, but honestly just hadn't thought about it much. But this entire meeting or training was about the productive struggle, letting students struggle, not intervening too early, with a goal of them eventually understanding the concept and having some success in getting there on their own. But as soon as I heard that term and really the presenter was going into detail about it, I thought, this is how I play fantasy football. This is how I play Dynasty, essentially drafting to win long-term, but not necessarily in year one, you know. And people were already doing that at that time, whether they called it tanking or whatever the terminology was. But I wrote that up as an article, as a strategy. And, you know, here we are 9 years later. I think that was 2014. I first wrote that. 9 years later, people are still talking about doing productive struggle teams in Dynasty startups. So that's certainly been a really cool and, you know, humbling experience, honestly. Really, though, I would say the ultimate connection is just how important building relationships really is. And, you know, you can talk about the content, what grade you teach, what subject you teach, and your expertise in those different areas. But especially as an elementary school teacher, I think it comes down to building those relationships, like I was kind of mentioning earlier. You know, that's obviously super important. And really, it's important in in every walk of life and every area we have. But I found relationships to be the most rewarding part of fantasy football as well, whether it's with league mates, whether it is with people that you know, that I'm on podcast with, people that I work with at DLF, or even, you know, just people that interact with and follow each other on Twitter. You know, some of my best friends now are people that I've met through fantasy football, through Twitter, through DLF, and you know, we're even several of us are even getting together next week to watch the draft and hang out and, you know, just enjoy spending time with each other and talking about football and all those things. So I would say that relationship piece, both for fantasy football and certainly for teaching, is huge.
Everyone wants to share their rankings in fantasy or draft boards. We all just want to share information. And I feel like in teaching, it really is like that. A new resource come out, everyone make sure, you know, emails it to everyone in the school or you know, helping. Oh yeah. You know, I've had, you know, taking over class. Oh, well, I used to teach this class. Here's the binder I used. Mm. And so I find like the sharing our knowledge is really common in both fields.
Yep, for sure.
Another question from the Cleveland connoisseur himself, Jamie.
Yeah.
What was the first football magazine you wrote for? So was Productive Struggle the first article, or redating before 2014?
So Productive Struggle, I don't know if I actually wrote that up in a magazine. Actually, I'm sure I've put referenced it. Okay. Yeah. So that article was on DLF. It might have been Roto World was the first one. I did Dynasty content for Roto World for 5 or 6 years, quite a while. So that might be the first one. I'm not exactly sure, but it was probably Roto World.
And I'll be honest, I actually didn't know Productive Struggle was a teaching term. Now I teach at a, you know, in a French school board, so I wonder if there is like a French terminology that means that I'm familiar with, but
well, again, yeah, and I mean, again, it's not like we say that term every day, you know. I mean, it's a little bit different than talking about standards or curriculum or some of those very common teacher words, right? Yeah, I had heard the term. I'm not sure I'd ever used the term myself at all, but once I did really hear it and really kind of focus on it, I made the connection to fantasy.
You didn't struggle to figure out that connection.
I did not.
So, and this can go for, I guess, either sphere of teaching or fantasy football, but who have been the biggest influences in your life so far?
Wow. That's a big one. I mean, I would have to say my father, certainly. We talked about him as far as the sports impact, but you know, hopefully we're all able to give an answer like that, as far as how, you know, how he shaped my life. And he passed away way too soon, a little over 20 years ago. But yeah, still certainly feel his influence every day. So that, yeah, that's probably my number one answer. And, you know, honestly, when I really think about it, I don't know if I would have pointed out that teacher back in seventh grade, but he of course had a big impact as well.
Yeah, paying homage to the people that have helped us get this far is important. So my condolences to your father.
Yeah,
though it's been a while, no, it still can't be easy.
No, not easy, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, get to a lighter topic. I don't have really have a good way to transition to that, but are your favorite hobbies? And I know fantasy football, like, it's more than a hobby for you, but it certainly takes up a lot of time. But outside of fantasy, do you have any hobbies that you love?
Yeah. I mean, certainly a big, you know, entertainment as far as movies and TV. Try to catch as many new movies and try to keep up with all the TV shows, which is becoming impossible, as you know, as many streaming options and things like that as there are. But definitely enjoy watching movies and TV. I would say travel is becoming more of a hobby, as far as just visiting different places. And whether that's with family or with friends, or both, you know, that's definitely something I try to do as much of as I can. And then in high school and in college, I was able to run cross country. And while I don't run anymore, I have over the past few years have been coaching my son and his high school teammates as part of the cross country team. So yeah, those things along with family and fantasy football take up a big chunk of my time.
Awesome. And you know, all so much on teaching, but what's one thing the fantasy community has taught you?
Man, that's a good one as well. Probably just, again, going back to those relationships, how important those are. You know, I think we see this, really, we probably see it on Twitter more than anything else, but just kind of how you represent yourself, because for the most part, these people that we are, that we're talking to on Twitter, that are listening to us on a podcast, that are reading an article, you know, we don't really know each other. So the way you present yourself and hopefully in a good way, really is just going to be the way those people think about you. Right. So, I mean, if you are, if you're out of line, if you're rude and in a random tweet, that can have, you know, a really big impact that you might not think about. Not just that you might lose a follower or somebody might not, you know, interact with you next time, but just kind of the way you're thought of in general is so important.
Try and leave as many doors open and bridges intact and don't close things and burn things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And also everything in between of closing a door and burning there, that's a wide range of negative behavior to a certain extent. There is a question here that we won't get to yet, Jamie. What's your favorite all-time movie or TV shows? Hinting at the high five section, perhaps at the end of the show, but we'll get to the, I guess we've talked about fantasy football enough, but the very specific fantasy football question portion of the show, we'll get to that now. And I suppose, considering you've already talked about your dynasty origins and the fact that you I've been so deeply ingrained with Dynasty League football for so long, I think we probably will know the answer to this. However, I'll ask it anyway. What is your preferred league format?
Yeah, well, it certainly is Dynasty. I'm gonna get a little more specific for the Dynasty, you know, the Dynasty crazies that are out there. So I wouldn't call this my own format, but I basically made a series of leagues several years ago that I called the Kitchen Sink Leagues. And the idea at the time was to take all of these different league rules and settings that we enjoyed in different leagues and combine them into one. So that's what I tried to do. Of course, there's super flex leagues, which when I started those 10 years ago, were not necessarily the norm. It's pretty much become the norm now. So I don't even need to mention that necessarily, but they're contract leagues. They are auction leagues, multiple auctions every single offseason. They are Devy leagues as well. And then I also included a couple of other unique rules. We might get to a couple of those later in the show, but I ended up doing five of those leagues. There's also 24 teams in each league, except one of them has 48. So they're larger leagues split into two conferences. You know, at least in my mind, they've become a league format of their own. And those have definitely become, you know, probably my favorite way to play Dynasty and to play fantasy in general. And then I would also throw in one other. Over the last couple of years, I've started playing in vampire leagues. You ever done a vampire league?
I have not, but I am familiar with the format.
Oh, so these are addictive, especially if you get the chance to actually be the vampire in your league. These are leagues where, so if you're one team in the league is a vampire, and what that means is their team is dead. You don't get to participate in the draft. You take kind of all of the, absolutely. You take all of the scraps after every other team has built their roster. So you're usually building your team from the waiver wire. And then the sweet part about that is when you win, if you win, you get to steal a player from the opposing team that you just beat. So, you know, obviously with every win, your team gets a little stronger, and eventually, and sometimes very quickly, you can become one of the better teams in the league. So Vampire Leagues, I think the credit for that league format actually goes to my DLF buddy, Tom Kislingberry, I believe had that original idea and shared that on Twitter. Matthew Berry loved the idea and actually played in a few of his own Vampire Leagues. And since then, people have turned those into Dynasty Leagues. So Vampire Dynasty, that's sneaking up on Kitchen Sink is my favorite way to play.
I know. I remember the first time I heard about it was, again, from DLF, John Hogue and the late, great James the Brain Catullus on the Superflex Stripper Show. I think that it was even back when Travis was on, and Travis the Beard Guy.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And yeah, I think I remember them talking about it back then. But
as Jamie... I know John, John still runs some of, at least one of his own Vampire Leagues, I know.
Yeah, and I know Jamie is putting exactly what I was thinking in the comments as well. Jeff Lambert created Zombie Leagues last year. And actually, there's an article on goingfor2.com. I think it is one of our most searched articles. So just go to goingfor2.com, search up Zombie Leagues, and Jeff has written an article which basically acts as league constitutions for how they work. Explains them really well in detail. Very similar to the Vampire League, only it's even worse. Because not only if you lose to a vampire, you lose one starter. If you lose to a zombie, the zombie steals one of your starters and you have to drop all but one of your starters. And I think you can substitute, like you can protect one of your starters, but you have to drop one of your bench players at the same position. And then you become a zombie and it becomes an infection. And I was lucky enough to win last year and I ended up being the only human left, which I suppose if you said that there's one human that's going to survive, it would make sense that they probably end up winning the league because, I'm not having to drop my starting lineup, but I could still, part of someone having pick to drop up, their whole lineup, that's all available to pick up, kind of like a guillotine league style almost,
right?
Where they, Jeff calls it the feeding frenzy on the Tuesday, that first waiver run where, man, like the players that were on that waiver and the bid amounts that were made were quite crazy. And
I've done a couple of guillotine leagues as well. So combining vampire and guillotine into zombie leagues, that's a pretty fun concept. I'm gonna have to check that out.
We found out the hard way that like it has to be one QB or just one super flex spot because Jeff did two last year where Ryan Searfoss, I guess they got the two main co-hosts. Mm-hmm. Ryan Searfoss was the zombie in the super flex in the 2QB super flex league, like a 1QB spot and a super flex, whereas Jeff was I think we still had a 1QB to start, but no super flex. And Jeff was the zombie in that one. And he won week one. So it was chaos right from the start. Whereas it took Foss, I think, like 8 or 9 weeks to finally win. So like there was no real zombie infection in that league. So part of it last year was just like just trying to test out the format too, because this was just something Jeff invented last year. It was Jamie that lost to Patient Zero. Okay, sorry, Jamie. Sorry to bring that up—the traumatic memory of being eaten by a zombie. let's go to, I guess, happier memories. The league rules, right? If you love leagues and structure and order, rules make you happy. But what's one rule that you feel like you have to have in every league?
Yeah, it's one that I kind of to that as far as including in those kitchen sink leagues. And it's a rule I've called second chance. So this started a long time ago, 10 years ago or more, maybe. I guess more than that. A friend had reached out and was asking for advice. He was in a league and they were bringing in a couple of new managers in the league and they were going to have a dispersal draft, and the commissioner had opened it up and said anybody that wants to do this dispersal, even if you've been in the league, anybody can jump in. And my friend was just thinking this doesn't seem right, this is kind of out of nowhere, and just wanted my advice. He knew I commissioned a bunch of leagues, and so I agreed with him. I didn't think it it necessarily made sense. But big picture, I loved the idea. I didn't necessarily love it in that instance because I'm a big believer. If, you know, if it's not in the rules, if you're not planning for it, then you can't just necessarily change things on a whim. But I loved the idea of giving those managers that have been in the league a chance to reboot, because I had noticed as I was running leagues, one reason for managers leaving was their team was just bad. And, you know, maybe they felt like they couldn't overcome that, they couldn't rebuild it. So giving people a chance to stay in the league, but also at the same time, get a new team essentially, was appealing to me as a commissioner. So that's one thing I've included in all my leagues. You can do the second chance option. And as long as more than one team joins you, you know, then we're going to have a second chance draft or a second chance auction in the case of the Kitchen Sink Leagues. And I'd say that would be one rule I would include in any of my dynasty leagues moving forward.
I'm going to shout out to a previous guest on the show. You go back 2 years to season one, Scott Connor. And in his leagues, he has the second chance dispersal option available every year, but you've got to pay like a 15% tax on the buy-in to do so. And part of that helps in case like you're ever desperate to fill an orphan because the team's so bad that you just give it away for free. Like, okay, your first year buy-in is on the house type thing. And so like to not necessarily take away from the winner, if you kind of build up those second chance dispersal pots a little bit, you can kind of use that that money to kind of, you know, fill the void of, you know, having to give away a team for free, but you don't take away from the winner's pot.
Yeah, Scott is a good friend. We're in a bunch of leagues together. I didn't know he used that rule though, so that's definitely interesting. I like that as as an option.
Mr. Flowchart himself. is that for you or for me? Because I do like a spreadsheet here and there.
Yeah, I think that's probably for me. So during the regular season, I just compile stats, fantasy performances, and kind of keep up with how many QB1 games, how many RB1 games each team has allowed, and then use that to kind of check matchups for the coming week. So if that one team has allowed 10 tight end one performances, we're just playing whoever the opposing tight end is, regardless of where he might rank. And I share that each week on Twitter. And lacking a more creative name, I've called it the flow chart.
Well, that sounds like the Arizona Cardinals defense, if I ever heard of it.
That is exactly who I was thinking about.
I think
it always seems to be them.
Well, and I think that's a time capsule season, because wasn't TJ Hawkinson's very first NFL game a 2-touchdown performance against that Cardinals defense? So I'm pretty sure it's 2019.
Oh, well, you have a better memory than I do, but I definitely would not be surprised if that was the case.
Because I'm pretty sure Hawkinson did almost nothing the rest of his rookie year, and all of his like year-end stats are just inflated by the one week one performance.
That's funny. Yeah, that does sound familiar.
Apparently, you've got someone who wants to check it every week now. And part of it, what we have with Restream, Facebook, I guess, privacy concerns, we actually can't see Facebook users' names. So if you want to have your name shown, head over to thegoingfor2.com. The Going for Two Live YouTube channel. Just search in Going for Two Live on YouTube and the channel should pop up. You could come join the chat live or remain anonymous. And we still love your comments regardless if you're on Facebook, on Twitch. So this one's for me. It says, hey, Kyle, loves Second Chance League. So, and Toronto Dave showed up, another Canadian.
Nice. Hey, Dave.
My girlfriend is a flowchart I look at every month. Jamie's comments every show are just, hey, I mean, this is the dude that pays for condos with cash. So that's the Cleveland connoisseur, man.
Must be nice.
I know. Must be amazing. You know, it's really nice though, having those like that QB1 or that, you know, whatever position one performance. So Ryan, who is your all time favorite QB1, RB1, wide receiver one, and tight end one?
Yeah, man, there's so many ways to look at this and to think about this. I didn't want to just look at scoring and who was at the top, but just kind of tried to think about over my time playing fantasy, who really stood out as the most impressive, consistently impressive player. So at quarterback, I'm torn here. I've got Peyton Manning, which is certainly chalky. But I think about Michael Vick as well. And I really feel like Michael Vick changed the game. Of course, we've seen so many, we've seen running quarterbacks become the norm now. And of course he had, he kind of had some rough times off the field. And obviously when he was in prison, I mean, in dynasty leagues, we just gave up on him, right? We dropped him. He was in prison for, I believe, multiple years. And to see him come back from that and really go right back to where he was as far as a producer on the field and a fantasy producer, and was really impressive. And so good to see him overcome that. And like I said, I feel like he probably changed the game, especially from a fantasy standpoint. At running back, this one was a little bit easier. LaDainian Tomlinson is who I went with here. I remember the first dynasty league I started, I ended up with the 101, very lucky, and drafted LaDainian Tomlinson. So these were one quarterback leagues, and this is 2005, probably 05, 06, something like that. So he was the pretty easy pick, and certainly paid off on that draft capital.
I was hoping it's at least 2006 early, because you would have had that 2006 season to go with it, right? Anything after maybe not wouldn't have quite measured up. So
yeah, I actually think it was 2006. I think that's correct. So yeah, I got the payoff there. Won the league title in the very first year, thanks to LT. So yeah, that must have been 06.
Apparently Jamie's first ever pick was Tomlinson in 2004. Do you remember, just a side question, do you remember who the first player ever picked in fantasy was? I guess it would have been a dynasty draft.
It was the dynasty draft. It was a dynasty rookie draft. I joined the friend I was mentioning earlier, joined his league. And, now as a guy who's commissioned a bunch of leagues, I know better. Like, I know how it should work. I had no idea how it should work then. So when I joined this new league, I joined as an expansion team. They were going from 10 to 12 teams. So myself and another guy joined the league as brand new managers. And they gave us the last two picks in the rookie draft. We didn't do any type of expansion draft. We just picked players off the waiver wire to build our team. So I really didn't understand how much I was getting screwed in that deal. So I had the last pick in the first round of that rookie draft and drafted Byron Leftwich. So that was my first one. I wish it was a better player or really a better experience, but it was enough to get me hooked on dynasty leagues.
So we've got quite a few answers coming in terms of different answers. Just do want to shout out to Jay Eubanks, who does co-host the 2-Point Conversion. They'll be on next Monday. And, we alternate every Monday. So yeah, press coverage here.
It's that Facebook user.
Yeah, exactly. So Jay, and I guess Jay's chiming in. His first ever pick was Michael Vick. So we're coming in full circle there.
Nice.
And I guess, so Jamie chimed in on his all-time QB1 apparently is Fran Tarkenton. Also want to shout out another Going for Two Live member, Tim Strobel, who does DFS shows Friday nights in season. And he's also going with Peyton. I assume it's not Sean Peyton as a number one fantasy coach, right? I remember my first player I ever drafted was Arian Foster in a redraft league, but dynasty wise, okay, it was a rookie draft, and it was Nelson Agholor, my first ever dynasty rookie pick. So
we're kind of on the same page there as far as the impact, probably.
I will tell you, Nelson Agholor is certainly not my wide receiver one or ever a wide receiver one on any team in fantasy. But who is your all time favorite wide receiver one?
I'm going with Randy Moss here. And, again, just such a fun player to watch. Again, kind of the theme, not an intentional theme, really, but overcoming some off-field stuff did Randy Moss, especially, you know, late in his high school and early in his college career. Kind of had that negative reputation coming into the league, and which really is what pushed him down to the Vikings pick in the 20s. And then after he leaves, Jamie's all over it here. After he leaves Minnesota, he goes to the Raiders and struggles and really is pretty terrible. And then, I just kind of think of the dynasty impact of these guys. And I mean, his value fell off the planet. We just thought he was done at that point. Ends up with the Patriots. They gave up like a fifth rounder or something to trade for him. And we know how that went from there. Reminded us why he's one of the best wide receivers ever in his few seasons with Tom Brady and the Patriots.
Yeah, set a record, I believe, for receiving touchdowns in that magical 2007 season. Toronto Dave chimed in. His first fantasy football picks were Matt Forte and Dez Bryant at the turn. Depending on the year, that might have been amazing. Because speaking of records, I'm pretty sure McCaffrey's single season receiving yards record he broke Matt Forte's record, and that would have been like 2013. I think he set that. So if you had Matt Forte and Dez Bryant in 2013, that was a really solid combo. So hopefully that was that year, Dave. And we'll of course end it with the tight end one.
I got to go Gronk here. I didn't really mean to go with the Patriots theme, but that's how it ended up after the run they've been on throughout my time playing fantasy football up until the past couple of years. But Gronk, just so impressive. Another player, the third here, along with Vic and Moss, who went away, lost a ton of value, came back and regained nearly all of that value and all of that production.
I mean, he actually retired, right? Like, so I'm sure there was some teams just dropped him. I'm sure some teams, I still see teams hanging on to him now, to be honest, but some.
Yeah. Teams dropped him and teams dropped, like I said, teams dropped Vic as well. He wasn't retired, obviously, but there was doubt as to whether he would play in the league again.
So the good news for Dave is that, yes, it was 2013. He had Bryant and Forte. The bad news is he ran into Jamal Charles probably in week 15. Four or five.
I was gonna say that was that's the one we all remember.
Probably the worst trade I've ever made was trading away Jamal Charles that season.
Oh yeah, no matter what you got, it stings.
It was a super flex league and I got Aaron Rodgers, and 2013 he broke his left collarbone like 2 weeks after the trade happened. So there was a few more pieces involved, but like that other manager had LeSean McCoy as well. So he literally had the RB1 and 2 on his team and just traded away an injured quarterback before it happened. So yeah, that was probably the worst trade I've ever made. We're going for two, Jamie. We're not doing kickers. I mean, unless Ryan wants to. Honestly, I have done I've done it for Linda when she came on. I made sure to include kickers there. That's it. I don't think I've done it for any other guest. So I assume you would want to go by the kickers and we'll forego them.
Yeah, we'll leave those for Linda for sure.
So going for two, but we'll finish with the high five section. So to answer Jamie's question from earlier, some of your favorites in five different categories, or top five from five different categories. And we'll start rocking out. Shout out to Linda. But before we get to that, apparently Jay's talking about the worst trade he's ever made. So was trading Priest Holmes and Eric Molds for Marshall Faulk the year Priest went crazy. And I'm guessing this was close to the end of Marshall Faulk's career as well.
Yeah, I was going to say getting Marshall Faulk, depending on when, was definitely not a bad thing, but trading Priest before he became Priest, before he went crazy and really became one of the biggest surprises ever in fantasy football. That stings a little.
But again, you just mentioned one of the biggest surprises, so no one really saw that coming. So sure a lot of people traded Priest Holmes probably for less than Marshall Faulk. I guess the Molds had, and I didn't really know that, had like 1,200 yards that year too. So yeah, double whammy.
Yeah, Molds was always underrated, undervalued. Kind of reminds me, not necessarily type of receiver, but almost like Tyler Lockett, like always goes way later than he should and just continues to produce.
Yeah, that's Tyler Lockett. But I don't know if Tyler Lockett's in a band, but who are your top five favorite bands or musical artists?
You know, I thought about this for a while. Well, first of all, I'm not really a big music guy. I mean, I don't necessarily listen to music all the time, especially, you know, as popular as podcasts have gotten, I find myself listening to podcasts more and more, especially over the past few years. But I thought about music that I enjoy, and I kind of found myself thinking about different eras of my life, really. So I remember when I was a kid, we went on it was actually a church trip, and my parents both worked with the youth group. I was 10 or 11 at this point, probably. And we end up hanging out with all these teenagers, and they're watching MTV, and they're listening to all this music, which I hadn't really even been exposed to at that point. And I just remember lots of hair bands, right? Like this was like Guns N' Roses and Aerosmith, and that was some of their favorites. That for this week long trip, it just felt like a whole week of listening to Guns N' Roses on this church trip, which is kind of odd, you know, when you throw it all together like that. But I would say my favorite group from that era, and they don't fit into the hair band category, but Metallica just became one of my favorites, and you know, still enjoy listening to them. So that kind of came from that, and you know, as I got older and started listening to more and more you know, popular music, current music, whatever you want to say, Beastie Boys became a favorite of mine. And I would even, you know, I would even throw Tupac into that. I mean, lots of, you know, kind of all that rap, again, popular music that you might listen to in high school. So Beastie Boys would be my second option on the list here. and as I left high school, as I graduated from high school, I've got kind of a weird high school college story that I moved away to college, but my parents moved with me. My entire family ended up moving to where I went to college, a small town in the middle of Kentucky. And my mom actually got a job at the college. My dad eventually got a job at the college. So it was kind of a family affair. But this town was, like I said, small town in the middle of Kentucky. And if you turned on the radio, your only option was country music. And up until that point, early in my college years, I hadn't listened to country music at all, but you didn't really have any option. You couldn't avoid it in this town. So I somewhat became a country music fan. And so that era of my life, I'll go with, you know, with kind of a classic, I'll go with George Strait as my college years. So moving on here, you know, I would say over recent years, especially, I find myself, if I do listen to music, it's probably Christian music, praise music, and worship music. And one of my favorites right now is Phil Wickham. So I'll put him fourth on the list. And lastly, if there's music in our house being played, it's probably my teenage daughter listening to either Taylor Swift or Olivia Rodrigo. And I've got to admit, I like songs from both of these ladies. So I'll in honor of my daughter, I'll stick those two as a tie for the fifth spot.
It's funny because my wife has influenced me to listen to more Taylor Swift and Olivia Rodrigo. We have that album too. So
nice.
Although I got to agree with Dave, because Dream On is probably my favorite Aerosmith song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Nice shout out, Dave. It's funny, you mentioned Metallica is not a hair metal band, yet when they cut their hair, everyone made such a big deal about it. So
that is true. Yeah, maybe, again, I'm not super deep music guy in general, so I don't think of them as a hair band, but maybe they qualify.
There's an anthropologist in Canada, I forgot his name, but he does a lot of documentary filmmaking, and he's also a big metalhead. So I know he's done a couple of metal documentaries, and one had like, okay, he's gonna go through the genres and try to organize bands. I'm pretty sure, yeah, I think if you were to categorize Metallica, it wouldn't be hair metal, I think it'd be probably thrash metal. So to your point, they probably don't count as a hair metal band.
All right, I'll take it.
But all genres need hair anyway. anyway, so we'll go to JB's question from earlier: favorite movies and TV shows. So we'll hit those two: top five movies and then top five TV shows, or TV shows then movies, whatever you prefer to order. I will admit though, I do like the way you kind of tied, you know, our memories to our senses, right, and music to different times in your life too. I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah,
take it away. Thank you. I'll go in typical reverse order here on movies, and it was, you know, like everyone, I'm sure it was hard to narrow it down to five. But at number five, I went with the movie I probably consider the most rewatchable, just personally. If it's on, I'm watching it. If there's 30 minutes left, if it's at the very beginning, it doesn't matter. Catch Me If You Can. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hanks, love that one. So that'll be number five on my list. Number four, again, a classic, would show up on a lot of these lists, I'm sure. Shawshank Redemption, same thing, rewatchable. Just really, really amazing performances in that one. A great story for sure.
I'll shout out, because I'm also with Full Press Coverage, the Jeff Lambert of Full Press Coverage is Ian Glendon, editor-in-chief and in charge of it all. If I would ask him, he would just say it's Shawshank five times. Like that's number five is Shawshank, number four is Shawshank.
Hey, I get it. I get it. That I can see why. Number three, I went with the movie Seven. Any movie where there's, you know, some type of mystery, something to figure out, that's probably one I'm going to enjoy, which is why these top two are my top two. Number two, Usual Suspects. You know, probably the greatest kind of whodunit, or you know, the one that has the most things to figure out, even though there's really no way to see it coming. That's one that I love. And number one on the list is Memento. That's my favorite movie.
Well, we'll shout out Bryan Singer, because he's directed quite a few movies that I really like. I'm pretty sure he's the director of Usual Suspects. So
yes, I think that's right.
All right, and we'll move on to top five TV shows.
Okay, so number five, I went with Law & Order, which if you're thinking about the current episodes, probably not that great. But again, I just feel like I grew up on these classic Law & Order episodes and the procedural and solving the crime. So I loved especially those old Law and Order episodes. Number four, The Office, the only comedy on my list. It was tough to choose between that and Parks and Rec, but I went with The Office there. Number three, Survivor. I love, obviously love the game aspect of it. I think there are some ties to fantasy football and kind of game theory in general on that one. Number two, Breaking Bad. Again, a classic, would show up on the list of a lot of people watching this probably. And number one is The Shield. That was, I think, on FX back a long time ago. But that's my favorite show ever.
So Gladys loves your take on the movies, your number one and two. Not so much the slander of the new Law and Order. Apparently Jamie loves SVU, which I think is what you're referring to, right? Or are you talking classic Law and Order?
Well, I enjoy them all, but maybe I've just gotten too far behind, and they've thrown in a couple of new versions and I just can't keep up. But I actually used to have all of the Law and Order episodes on videotape. My wife is in the other room giving me a hard time about that right now, but like I said, I love all those versions of Law and Order. I like them all.
So apparently Jamie used to watch The Shield, great show, and yep. Gladys just said yeah, of course. So we a little bit of AFC North rivalry there going on between the Steelers fan and, by the way, one of the other co-hosts of the 2-point conversion next Monday. Speaking of 2-point conversion co-host, Jay apparently is Walking Dead, the only show I missed football for.
Yeah, I remember those days. What, you know, Walking Dead and I think Lost was kind of like this as well, although you didn't have to miss football for Lost, I don't think.
Yeah, Wednesday.
But Wednesday night, if I remember correctly. You know, just the weekly buildup, and I mean, both of those were, you know, pretty much directly pre-streaming before that really took over. But that, you know, that weekly wait until the next episode was tough sometimes. And it really did build it up so much that even if you could record it and catch it later, you didn't want to. You wanted to know as soon as you could. So yeah, I skipped football for Walking Dead a few times as well.
So Gladys loves apparently the new darker Law and Order. Dave's also into Law and Order. It's funny you mentioned Lost because I almost thought about it earlier, was going to bring it up, so I'll bring it up now. Perfect transition. We were talking about the Red Sox, right? And talk about time capsule moments, because that first season of Lost, Jack talks about, oh, that's why the Sox will never win the series. But like Lost starts September 2004, and the Red Sox finally won the World Series October 2004. So it's funny that it, like, that's just really a season one thing, because it ends like right there.
I don't know if I had ever made that connection, but I mean, Lost was kind of ahead of its time in a lot of ways.
Oh, I was obsessed with that show. So much symbolism in the, you know, the colors of clothes characters are wearing. Like, they put a lot of detail into it. It's the idea of the ensemble cast too, kind of, like you said, a bit ahead of its time. You maybe see that a bit more commonly now. Some more things. Jamie just started Game of Thrones, and it's pretty good. Everything I've heard about the show, it's pretty good because you just started it. Yeah. and that's true. Lost is basically like a cult. So if I was, that would probably have made my top five for sure. And Dave saying Sopranos 1, Wire number 2.
You know, I was just talking with someone on Twitter the other day. I've not watched The Wire. I think I watched a couple of episodes, but you know, as much as I enjoy these cop shows and crime shows, I really need to make some time to watch it, because, you know, Dave and so many others have enjoyed it. So yeah, I need to put that one high on the list.
Yeah, I only saw it in recent years. I had one friend who's a Giants fan who kept egging me on, you got to watch The Wire. I eventually did, and I realized, okay, yeah, this is why. He told me to keep watching The Wire. One of my favorite HBO makes a lot of good stuff, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't put it at the top of the HBO list, but it's probably number 2. I'm a big True Detective fan, which apparently my wife just told me that season 4 has been announced.
It looks pretty good, too. I think we might be going back to season 1 vibes, which hopefully that's the case.
I mean, I absolutely loved season 3.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Because I felt it was closer to the season 1 vibes than season 2. Yeah. So, yeah. If we get even further down that, I love that. Apparently, I guess this is to everyone in the chat, too, as well as you, Ryan. Have you seen the prequel movie for Sopranos? Or do you even watch Sopranos?
Yeah, no, I watched Sopranos. I've watched it through a couple times, actually. That was one of my COVID activities, is rewatching the entire series of The Sopranos. But no, I didn't watch the prequel.
Apparently Dave didn't either. Oh, I love this, Gladys, because I totally agree. Lost is fabulous, except for the ending. I don't really love season 6. And if you, to those who, and I won't necessarily spoil it, but how season 6 is divided, I love half of it, but I don't love the other half. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lost is again. I have a terrible memory, so
it's so convoluted. It always seemed like it was going to be tough to end, no matter how they did it. Like, it was
right,
because, like you said, the best of it was the anticipation, the mystery, the not knowing, and you're constantly discovering new things. Your every episode, you're getting more questions than answers, which is fun.
Yeah.
And then you get all the answers, and it's less fun. that's why they never show the scariest movies. They never show the creature until the very end. Like, keep the suspense of what is it, like, that keeps it scarier, is the unknown.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll keep moving on, cooking up a couple more questions, including top 5 favorite game day foods.
I'm gonna be pretty boring here as well, I think. Kind of chalky answers.
Hope you're not eating chalk.
That's true. Sometimes. Number 5, I'll go with sausage balls. I love those. Those are anytime we have any kind of get together, football or anything else, we usually have those. Number four, brownies, just my favorite sweet treat. Number three, chips and queso. Again, pretty classic, easy answer there. Pizza, number two. Yeah, I mean, you gotta have pizza, right? And wings, number one. So yeah, especially at the top, pretty boring there. Nothing too special.
If I was ranking, I'd probably go pizza one, right? Like, it's just the perfect party food and game day food. And apparently Gladys loves the Omar ringtone, which if you watch The Wire, you'll hear his famous whistle. I'll help Jamie out on this. So yes, Crave TV, which is a Canada kind of only streaming service, they do, as part of their subscription, does have HBO Max. So that's how I've watched The Wire, is through Crave. So yeah, you probably should have it, Jamie.
Man, yeah, if you have access to HBO Max and you don't even know it, you've got a great week or 2 weeks or month ahead of you, because you've got a lot of good shows and movies to catch up on.
It might be just be HBO, but at least you get access to a ton of HBO. So I don't know if HBO Max includes extra things that you may not have at Crave, but I know the part of the Crave subscription is at least the basic HBO package, which includes a ton of shows and movies. So yeah, should have access to that. Apparently Jay loves the food you mentioned. That's all good chalk. So yummy.
Good.
Very appetizing. And then we'll end with the final top five college athletes all time.
Yeah, well, we talked earlier in the show about my growing up in Kentucky, still living in Kentucky, and being a UK fan. So that's going to have they're going to be well represented here on this one. So we're going to see some basketball players here for sure as well. I'll say number five is a little known basketball player. Did end up playing in the NBA, played for Kentucky, and probably overall my favorite UK player ever. His name was Chuck Hayes. Played in the NBA for a little while with the Rockets and a couple of other teams. But just like hard worker, was known as a good rebounder, not a flashy guy at all. Just really honestly seemed like a great guy, easy guy to root for, and was fun to watch on some of those Kentucky teams. Back in the early 2000s. Number four, this is my only non-Kentucky player on the list, so this one stands out. Tim Tebow. And I mean, I think he's the greatest college football player ever, as far as accomplishments, titles, Heisman, and really just all he did as a college player. And, you know, kind of became a little bit of a punchline because of his NFL career and the Tebowing, the kneeling, all of that. But we can't forget how awesome he was in college for Florida. Number three, go back to UK here for the last three guys. Number three, the only UK football player on the list, Tim Couch. So fun to watch that Kentucky offense and Tim Couch. And of course he, you know, kind of like Tebow, became a little bit of a punchline, a little bit of a joke when he moved on to the NFL, because he did struggle. He was yet another, you know, on the long list of Cleveland Brown bust.
Cover your ears, Jamie.
Over the years, sorry, Jamie. Still like him though, and still was great memories from a UK and college standpoint. Last couple guys really changed the game for Kentucky basketball. Number two, Jamal Mashburn. So in the late 80s, Kentucky had basically gotten in trouble for a lot of recruiting violations and things that would be totally normal now, but certainly was not allowed then. So they were in trouble. They were kind of in the gutter. And Jamal Mashburn was the first big time recruit that came to Kentucky and kind of turned the program back around. And of course, Mashburn played in the NBA for a long time as well. And number one, kind of a similar story. This player came in and turned around some Kentucky struggles. A more recent guy, John Wall, still in the NBA actually, but so much fun to watch. John Calipari came in, brought a ton of recruits with him, as he kind of does every single year. And but John Wall was the first one that really kind of brought excitement back to Kentucky's basketball program.
Well, okay, I guess you don't have to worry about insulting the Browns in front of Jamie, because he says he loved Tim Couch, but they suck so bad he ruined him. So, and then Dave went through a few of his, are actually funny, four basketball players: J.J. Redick, Carl Anthony Towns, Marcus Smart, D'Angelo Russell, and Heisman winner Reggie Bush. I don't care if it's official or not, we can still say Heisman winner Reggie Bush.
I'm with you. Yeah,
used to acknowledge the stupid NCAA rules and other.
I agree. Yeah. I definitely thought of Reggie Bush. Again, I'm not a USC fan at all, not really even a Reggie Bush fan, but gosh, just so much fun to watch him play every Saturday.
I'll be honest, Jay, I have no idea who Lou Alcindor is.
Kyle. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's Lou Alcindor.
Oh, okay. I actually did not know that. Huh.
But no, I'm old, but not that old, and I'm not a UCLA fan, so no.
Yeah, I guess I had to go to. Okay, yeah. So apparently everyone else knows. This is me. I didn't know productive struggle was a teaching term. I didn't know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's real name. So I'm learning today. Thanks for teaching.
I was going to say, we've taught you some things tonight. That's, here.
I knew there was a good reason I was bringing teachers on this season. Apparently you're redeemed from this, like the Law and Order slander is all behind because
okay,
of the
good.
College list. So
I want to be back in the good graces here.
What's Jamie saying about Cleveland now? Some people consider Jim Brown Syracuse one of the best college athletes, but he wasn't born yet. And I'm sure, Jamie, you probably think of Jim Brown in other regards of what he did for a certain other team, you know, won their last title for that team, for instance. apparently John Wall was incredible. So,
he was.
He was the last guy you mentioned. So it's a great last comment there from Dave. But I guess last words, Ryan, for the listeners.
Yeah, just thanks for having me on. This was a fun show. It's, I've been on a few that kind of stray away from fantasy football a little bit more and more into real life and interest and hobbies. And those are always always fun to talk about as well. So definitely appreciate you having me on, and appreciate the folks in the chat chiming in and mostly supporting my choices here.
Yeah, I know, like Casey Kasem, Get Real. I believe you've been on that one before.
Yep.
Similar show style and format. Jay thinks it's fun. So I guess if the guest thinks it's fun and the listeners think it's fun, then that's all that matters.
That's good enough, right? Yeah, that's all that matters.
And then apparently Kyle freaking rocks. Thank you, Gladys. Jamie says, great show, amazing. And speaking of the playoffs, Dave mentioned, are we going to get inevitably disappointed by the Leafs again? So I'm actually a Red Wings fan, even though I live in Ontario, which I suppose would be more common, like if you lived in Windsor, for instance, because Detroit's right there. So like super southern Ontario is probably common for Red Wings fans. Northern Ontario, not so much. I did pick the Leafs in a playoff pool I'm in, though. So if they do lose, I will at least be part of the disappointment, but just, not as much as the Leafs fans. It's not quite on Red Sox level in terms of length, but we're slowly approaching there, to be honest. And yes, the guess rocks too. For sure, Gladys. I totally agree with that. Sorry, Dave. Well, no, Dave, it won't just be you. There'll be so many people disappointed if the Leafs lose. Let's be real. There's you won't be crying alone. We'll hear the whole province of Ontario cry, basically, if they lose, especially lose another game seven. That's because playoff series in hockey are just like basketball, best of seven series. So playoff basketball game seven losses can be heartbreaking. The Leafs have had quite a few over the last few years. So it's we'll see. I guess they play tomorrow, I believe. So we'll find out if they how they get started. But before we end the show, Ryan, I'd like to thank you for coming on. This was absolutely fantastic. Love to hear all the guests who chimed in with their comments. Dave, Gladys, Jay, Jamie, Tim was in here earlier. So many great people showing up, chiming in. Appreciate all the support. Again, check out goingfor2.com. And of course, sign up for Underdog using our goingfor2 promo code, either the QR code on screen or the promo code GF2. Again, if you're looking at the screen, just like my hat, GF2. You can get the hat at goingfor2.com/store. You know what? Just go to goingfor2.com anyway. You've got lots of great content there. And again, the Underdog promo code GF2 to get that $100 deposit match. Check out we have a Going For Two Discord as well. So it's a free Discord. Lots of great conversations happening there. So I encourage everyone to go check that out. I know I believe the Going For Two Discord ran like, I want to say the most Scott Fishbowl mocks last year. Not to be cocky, but nice. I actually do think that is legit. Jeff and the Discord, they were constantly happening and constantly sharing. So as Scott Fishbowl season approaches, just check out the Going for Two Discord. We got a whole section just for Scott. We have several sections actually just for Scott Fishbowl.
We are we're loading folks into the system. We'll be sending out invites pretty soon, I think.
All right. So yeah, get the, make sure you sign up, folks. ScottFishbowl.com, I believe is the name of the website. Right?
That's it. Yep.
Oh, okay, good. Whew. Good. Got it. All right. Didn't mess it up. But yes, thanks a lot, Ryan. And once again, I'm Kyle Senra at Senra Says. Follow Ryan at RyanMC23 or RyanMac23. I don't know how you prefer to say it.
Yeah, either way, it's fine.
I guess RyanMC makes you sound a little more, a little cooler, right?
Rocking, I never thought of that. I need all the help I can get, so I'll take it.
Well, Gladys says the guest rocks too, right? So,
thanks, Gladys.
Yes. Thanks, Gladys. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ryan. And this was another episode of Press Coverage. Bye for now.